It's time now for America in the Balance. Brought to you by Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And now your co-hosts, Amanda Teagarden and Don Wyatt.
And welcome, freedom-loving Oklahomans, to another hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with my co-host, Don Wyatt.
I'm always happy to be here. It's the middle of election season. We're wrapped up in primaries, and we got funny things like rooster days going on. It reminds me of a thing down in New Mexico, in Deming, New Mexico. They have every year the big event in Deming, New Mexico is their duck races. So I guess I'm about to go learn what rooster days is all about. This will be fun.
What Don's talking about is we're broadcasting from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Rooster Days is taking place in Broken Arrow. And Don, I have to admit, I've been here for 25 years. I have never gone to Rooster Days.
Wow, and it's been going on for 81 years. A person would have had a chance to do that, wouldn't they?
It's like living next to the Eiffel Tower.
That's
you just
right.
Don't go see those things. We are very delighted today. Oh, well, let me back up. Our website is OKSafe. That's OK-SAFE.com. Lots of good information there. Our other website, dedicated to a single subject, exposing healthcare reform, and that web address is exposinghealthcarereform.com.
Right.
And that is hopefully a template for other states to pick up on and use in their own states as they struggle with the efforts to implement what the public calls Obamacare, but right. It really isn't. It was healthcare reform that started decades
in the
before.
Stimulus and before that, yeah.
Your state, I can guarantee you, is engaged in implementing all the provisions of the real health care bill, which was the stimulus bill,
right.
Followed by Obamacare.
That's right. Yeah, and it's going on all over the place, and it doesn't seem to matter which party's in power.
It does not. Don, you have a website?
We do, boondoggleblog.com. That's a website that we started about a year ago in connection with the Tulsa Taxes Task Force. The task force studies and monitors and digs out improprieties with our public monies, and then we publish on the boondoggleblog.com the information that we uncover.
Even though that's, again, aimed at Tulsa, we can guarantee you that those
Absolutely.
Same activities, those same slush funds
yeah.
are...
Boards, commissions,
exist in your state.
Trust
authorities. Yes, do not establish any more trusts in your city. All right, we're delighted today to have the third in a series of educational interviews. We've interviewed Michael Shaw, Freedom Advocates.
Right.
That was followed up by Patrick Wood of the August Review and the August Forecast.
Right.
And today we're delighted to have with us a returning guest, Dr. Michael Kaufman. And he is the president of Environmental Perspectives, Inc. and the CEO of Sovereignty International Corporation in Bangor, Maine. He's the founder of these very influential organizations, and he's also the author of several books, including Rescuing a Broken America and Plundered, How the Progressive Ideology is Destroying America, which is his latest book. Join us as Dr. Kaufman discusses Agenda 21, Environmentalism, Global Governance, the transition to a low-carbon economy, and the financial situation this country is facing. Dr. Kaufman, are you there?
I am, and thank you for having me on the program.
Well, we're delighted to have you, and thank you for taking time because we know you're a busy man.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, we, yes.
It really is a privilege to have you on and to speak with you again, Dr. Kaufman.
Well, thank you very much.
Why don't we let you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself and your organizations. Be sure and tell them what your website addresses are and any upcoming events that listeners might want to know about.
Well, I have a PhD in ecosystems analysis, and actual global warming was a minor that I had during my PhD years, and have been very much involved in both teaching at the university level as well as research. I left the academic world back in the early 1980s and am now worked for a while for the paper industry. And during that time, I was actually involved in overseeing a multi-million-dollar research effort on the effects of acid rain and mostly global warming on our nation's forests. Obviously, the timber company having wood as our primary raw material, if it was going to detriment that particular raw material, we had to know about it. So they spent millions and millions of dollars determining whether or not we were having global warming, and if we were, was man causing it, and was there anything we could do to stop it. It wasn't very many years into it. By the early 1990s, I was pretty well convinced that man was not causing it, that it was a natural cycle, and basically used that time and that research to combine with a lot of good research being done by the federal government at the time on acid rain to feed into a book that was used to define the new reauthorization of the Clean Air Act in 1991. Basically, what that was a pure agenda-driven law. It had nothing to do with the research that we had spent 10 years on defining exactly what was happening with acid rain and global warming. And basically, it was an agenda-driven entity that really, really went so far beyond what the research showed was necessary that it was nothing but a ghost, really, of what it should have been. And it was designed to hurt people. It was literally designed to hurt and confine and limit the activities that people can do, and while which there was no research to back it up whatsoever. When I saw that, I decided I had to find out what was going on. I knew there was an agenda behind it, but I didn't know exactly what it was. I left that for about a year when I tracked that stuff down with following the money trail and so forth, and realized that this was not just a national agenda, it was a global agenda to create world government. It was huge, and there were billions and billions and billions of dollars being spent to implement this worldwide. And as a result of that, I felt I really had to quit. If they're really passing legislation based on an agenda rather than the reality, I had to try to help people start to understand what was going. That's when I created Environmental Perspectives Incorporated back in the early 1990s, and have been doing that since. During 1994, when we stopped the Convention on Biological Diversity from being ratified an hour before the closure vote for the treaty in the U.S. Senate, is when I formed the Conditions Necessary for Sovereignty International with Henry Lamb, most of you know him, as well as several other people, Tom McDonald and Bob Voigt and so forth, who we all met down in the U.S. Senate, on the halls of the U.S. Senate, when we were trying to fight this thing from going into ratification back in July of that same year. So I became the head of Sovereignty International and have been involved in that now since that time, and basically trying to help people through both organizations understand what is really happening out there. And my book, Rescuing a Broken America, does that. But this new book, Plundered, Why the Progressive Ideology is Destroying America, that book really hits them head on. I have found, basically, I can trace this back well over 100 years to books and publications back in the 1890s that clearly define what these progressives are and the fact that they're very, very dangerous. And now they control both houses of Congress, but basically the Senate and most of the House of Representatives, because both parties are involved. Both parties have progressives in them. You have the progressive Democrats in the Democratic Party and the neocons in the Republican Party. Both of them are striving for world government. And until we have the knowledge of this in the United States, we're going to continue to vote these people into office time after time until they succeed. And I think we're one step away from that right now, especially when you understand really what's going on in the world today, because in the book I go into descriptions of things that you had no idea were happening in Europe, around the world, and so forth, that are basically designed or will cause this economy of the United States to collapse sometime in the very near future if we do not get it resolved very quickly.
Dr. Kaufman, just to follow up, if I might, you mentioned both acid rain and global warming as kind of linked concepts, and I remember hearing a great deal about acid rain through the 80s. Haven't heard that word, I don't think, in public in the last 10 years. Has that just dropped out of the debate, or what did happen with that as part of the...
Well, basically, it served its purpose in justifying, supposedly, the Clean Air Act reauthorization in 1991. There is really no substance to acid rain whatsoever. It's a really ironic thing that is, in the eyes of most people, basically seeing acid fall out of the clouds and destroying Mother Earth and so forth, when in fact there is no truth in that whatsoever. If we had any kinds of problems at all, it was acid fog. In other words, the clouds were somewhat acidic, and therefore the high elevation fir in along the Appalachians and the Adirondacks and so forth, these were harming the fir primarily, not the spruce necessarily, but the fir at those higher elevations. It was causing them to not live as long. In other words, a younger tree wasn't bothered, but as a fir tree grows older, which is usually 60 to 70 years, they become less able to defend themselves against this acid rain. And they were dying out maybe 10 to 20 years earlier than they should have been. But that was the extent of the so-called acid rain problem, and it didn't have anything to do at all with acid rain. It had to do with acid clouds.
Did it have anything, any impact at all on wood as a resource for the paper industry? Did it affect
that
at all?
No, not really. The high elevation fir basically is not utilized in the timber industry or the paper industry because of the logging restrictions and so forth. It's just too hard to get.
Got it.
So it really wasn't having an effect on the logging industry whatsoever. And basically, it was something we needed to be concerned about. Don't get me wrong. It was just to spend tens of billions of dollars to try to rectify a problem of this magnitude was a waste of money.
Got it.
There were things that we could do over the future when we built new power plants and so forth that would eventually help clean this up over a 20 or 30 year period without really any damage to the ecosystems whatsoever.
Super.
Well, so what you're saying, there would have been small modifications that would have resulted in large return.
Large returns without having forced retrofits and so forth, as they're trying to do now with clean coal and all the rest, which is really a bogus effort. What we're seeing now is an effort by the part of the current administration to literally destroy the coal industry, literally destroy it. Every step that they have made has done that to destroy it. The same thing with the fossil fuel industry as a whole. Oil, for instance, every effort has been made to restrict permitting process, to drag it out, to make it difficult. Oh, no deep water, even though the administration has had two contempt of courts already leveled at it for not issuing these permits and so forth, they continue to blatantly do it. And as a consequence, we are more and more vulnerable to getting oil offshore from people or from countries who hate us. And the whole effort that we've seen here recently of really high gas prices was the threat of war in the Gulf, in the Mideast with Iran, that would cut off the Straits of Hormuz. And that is a consequence of really political policy. We did not have to be in that position. We could be at this point, if we would have done a good energy policy starting in the late 1990s under Clinton, all the way through the Bush era and so forth, we could be at this point 100% self-sufficient if we wanted to be. Now, we'll never be use every drop of oil we produce in this country because there is a world market, but nonetheless, we could be if we chose to do that, and we would have oil that is much, much cheaper than it is right now. And really, ironically, we are washing oil already from the back of deposits up in the North Dakotas or the Dakotas and so forth that are finding basically they cannot sell all the oil that they're able to produce now because they can't transport it down to the Gulf of Mexico where all the refineries are. So it's a matter of government decisions that is keeping us in this really bad and very vulnerable from a national security perspective, based on politics. Nothing but raw politics.
Right. Well, I can believe that it's politics because there's never been any evidence that any of these global changes, whether it's global warming, global cooling, has been anthropogenic at all. Right. Never. And your statements and your research back in the 80s and 90s demonstrated that you couldn't find, as a trained professional, you couldn't find the connection between human activity and the earth. As a believer, I already know man cannot overcome God's plan. This is God's creation. God created it. He's in charge.
Right.
We are not large enough, powerful enough, or smart enough to figure out how to destroy it. And that's not going to happen. You have been working for a long time to expose the truth about the environmental movement and its connection to this global governance. And you've written a book on that, and I think it's called The Rise of Global Governance. And
no, that was Henry Lamb. It's a good book.
Okay.
And Henry Lamb, and it was an excellent book if you want to get it and really find the stepwise procedure or analysis of exactly what happened. That is an outstanding book.
No, I know Henry's book is, which is great, and I highly recommend it. But yours, it's a thin.
The Birth of. I think it was the word you used in your book. Yeah,
right.
That one.
The Saviors of the Earth and The Birth of World Government are the two books. One's kind of continuation of the other. Are the two books that really define the environmental movement and how they are really teaming up to create a world government.
I know this isn't on our list of things that we were actually planning to talk about, but the idea of peak oil and that the fuel is actually fossil fueled, right, rather than the earth producing it from its core. Do you know anything about that?
Oh, yes. Basically, I think it's pretty well assumed by most geologists now that fossil fuel isn't really from fossils.
I've thought that for a long time, because you can go down as deep as you want to go into the core and you'll still find it, and there hadn't been time for it to get there.
You'll still find it.
Yeah.
That's correct. In fact, many of the oil wells that we thought were depleted here in the United States, oil fields, have now been restored after not having any oil pumped out of them for 40 to 50 years.
Exactly, and it's back.
go ahead.
It's back. It replenishes, doesn't it?
It replenishes itself. It's just that we took it out too fast or to keep up with it for a while. But the real amazing thing is, like the Bakken field in the Dakotas, we have oil shale and so forth in the northern Rockies that it basically has a bigger supply of oil than the Saudi Arabia and Iraq fields combined. It is huge. It's the biggest oil field in the world. But because they talk about oil reserves, the peak oil phenomenon that you just mentioned, as being only those oil fields that have been actually brought online. In other words, they have oil being pumped out of them right now. Those are the only ones that count in that percentage.
That's what they mean when they say proven reserves, right?
Yeah, the proven reserve. Right. So when Obama says we only have 2% of the proven reserves, basically, he's technically correct. But he is it is really a skewed, it's almost a bald-faced lie in the sense that we have more oil in the United States than all of the rest of the world combined. That's probably an overstatement, but not by much.
Well, it'd be like me saying that in Tulsa we have only 2% of all of the radio broadcasters because I can only see me and Amanda right now.
Yeah, right, exactly. And that's what Obama is doing. I don't know that he has told the truth on anything since he's taken office. And I go back through in this book, Plundered, and basically describe what he has done to mislead the American people, especially in what we call blame shifting. It is literally staggering how these progressives, especially the Democratic possessive, can take the truth and make it into a lie and make a lie into a truth. It is unbelievable. Right now I'm looking at a thing that will be up on my website here very shortly, that the administration has a diagram on its website showing where our energy is coming from. And solar and wind and other biofuels basically make up the same percentage or so forth than natural gas and oil and nuclear and so forth, which is ridiculous. They make up less than 3% of the total. And yet the one thing that's missing off of this, or was coal. And coal makes up 40% of all of our electric production today. Now, given the cheapness of natural gas now, because we've flown the flood of that, it's very likely we'll go more and more to natural gas. But right now, it's 46%. And it was not even on this diagram. Coal was not even there. After so many people called in, basically pointing this fact out, they finally put coal in. But they didn't put it as coal. They put it in as clean coal.
Is that
now,
a
clean
different
coal costs $761 a ton to produce compared to the $46 to $52 that it's going for right now. In other words, it's 14 to 17% more expensive to produce clean coal than regular coal. It will never replace coal as a source with the current technology. Now, maybe one of these days we'll develop some other technology that's much cheaper, but not now. And yet he's saying that that is really the only alternative for coal that we have. It is unbelievable what this president is doing. He You could not set out to destroy this country any faster than what he is doing with the policies that he is implementing right now. If he desired to destroy the United States of America, he is right on target, because this will destroy the United States of America.
Yeah, he's the one famous for that quote about, let them try to build another coal-fired plant, yeah, and I'll bankrupt them.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's what he's doing. He's basically doing that with the new EPA regs that have come out a couple of weeks ago. Basically, those will forbid any new coal electrical production to be going online in the future. There will be no more coal-fired generators. Those that are already in existence, about 20 to 25% of them will not meet the new regs requirements and will have to be shut down. About 10% of them already have been shut down because it was hopeless. This president is literally destroying this economy. There is no way that you can get around it, because our economy has a one-to-one relationship with energy. You cannot have our economy without energy. And right now, about 90% of that energy is produced by, I'm going to use the word fossil fuels, even though that's a misnomer, by fossil fuels. And for him to basically say that we're not going to be using fossil fuels anymore is a death sentence for this nation. It's a death sentence.
Is it an attempt, in your opinion, to collapse the economy, an intentional attempt?
Yes, there's no question about it. In this book, Plundered, I go into all of the background of all of the, not all of them, you just can't, there's literally thousands of them, but the background intent for most of the non-governmental organizations like ACORN and so forth that we're all familiar with. These organizations are designed and funded entirely to destroy or destabilize this country and cause an economic collapse. That's their whole purpose. That's what their mission statement basically is, to collapse the American system, American economy.
Is the Occupy movement involved in that as well?
Yeah, I get a whole section on the Occupy Wall Street Unplundered. Basically, it was a very, very tightly organized, very well-funded effort, and I think we're going to start seeing, we saw this on May Day, of course, but we're going to start to see more and more activity this summer, and it's going to be violent. They're going to try to destabilize this country before the elections to perhaps require martial law. I don't know. You know, I mean, that's just speculation.
Well, there's some speculation out there is that the intent is to never waste a good crisis, and if you don't have one, create one. So you're going to collapse the economy. That's the objective, is to collapse the economy. And once it's collapsed and there's chaos, something has to rise up in its place. And people will be grasping at any solution that's going to restore order.
The minions will yell, fix it. Somebody needs to fix it.
So then in that place, don't you think that that would be the prime opportunity to bring forth something that's been brewing in the background for a long time, such as technocracy in its place, a different type of government?
Yeah, I think so. In fact, I've written a lot about technocracy, and I think that that might be the approach that they're going to be using. You know, we're heading for a perfect storm. There is no way around it. With all of the destabilization efforts of the progressives here in this country, with almost assured now demise of the European Union and the Euro, that those economies will collapse sometime. I don't know in what time frame. Certainly by 2013, and maybe prior to the elections. I don't know. We'll have to see how it's going. But all this rosy pictures of the European economy being restored and so forth, it's a bald-faced lie, folks. It really is. It keeps getting worse and worse and worse by the day. And it's just a matter of time before the whole thing collapses. The Spanish Prime Minister, about a month and a half ago, said that there was no way the European Central Bank and Europe can save them. There's no way that that can happen. The same thing with Italy. And the only one that might be able to is, of course, the IMF. And who funds the IMF?
We do.
Your pocketbook.
Yep.
So it basically, if the IMF does not come to the rescue, which Obama has said he would not do, now I don't know if he'll change his mind, but if they don't come to the rescue, Europe is going down sometime in the next year or so. And when it goes down, we have $10 trillion worth of debt that we have purchased from Europe. That's going to be made worthless overnight. But and we're going to be sitting with a $10 trillion deficit in that context off the balance sheets, and it's going to raise havoc with our economy.
Well,
all of this is coming together at the same time.
And the Federal Reserve opened up U.S. banks to Chinese.
Yes.
For them to open up a bank. And, you know, where one is, there will soon be more. banks, and I was going to write a little blog post and say hello to your new boss, who's the Chinese.
Tongue in cheek.
And you know, it's one of those things where the Chinese economy is in a slump now, too, primarily because they've overextended, spent money they didn't have. But the key point here is that the banks themselves owe about $5 trillion in the next year that they have to repay somehow. And so that's got to happen somehow. And they're in a weak position as well. But even so, China is basically trying to buy every gold mine and all the gold stocks in the world right now to put the corner on the market on gold.
Right.
And their purpose, express purpose, they've said this, is to basically destroy the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency. When that happens, if it happens, it's not going to happen overnight, but if it should happen, basically what would happen is that we have hundreds of trillions of dollars floating around in circulation around the world because as a reserve currency, it's the only currency that can be used to buy oil and often used to buy other commodities as well. When that is no longer necessary, when you can exchange the Deutschmark for a yen or something of that nature without having to go through the U.S. dollar, those dollars are going to be worthless. They're all going to come back to our shores worthless. And what's going to happen with inflation when that happens?
Not a pretty picture, and that's the music indicating the end of the first half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. Our special guest today is Dr. Michael Kaufman, and we're going to ask you to stick around through the bottom of the hour, and we'll be right back.
Do you need to promote your business on the Internet? The Truth in Focus Radio Network reaches listeners locally in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and all across the United States. The shift is on from traditional media to Internet marketing. Stay on the cutting edge with your business. Advertise with us today. Email radio at truthinfocus.org. You heard the word, so will they. Email us at radio at truthinfocus.org.
And welcome back to the second half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with my co-host Don Wyatt.
Yeah, great to be here. I love that Für Elise by Beethoven. I wonder if you wrote that before he was totally deaf or not. Suddenly I was curious about that.
It's a wonderful song.
It really is.
Our special guest today is Dr. Michael Kaufman. And when we ended the first half, we were talking about banks and the IMF. And Dr. Kaufman, I wanted to ask you about some research that you've done on the Bank for International Settlements. Can you just describe what that is?
Well, back in the 1960s, the foremost historian of the 20th century, Carol Quigley, wrote a book, Tragedy and Hope, and a couple others along with it. But that book really, because he had access to the globalist records for a period of at least 2 years, and he was in agreement with them, and he actually wrote this 1,300-page book to basically show how what they have done in the past and where they're going in the future. And eventually, he said that the Bank of International Settlements in Switzerland will eventually control the monetary supply of the world. And how their control, basically, he said very clearly that the banking systems, these banking families, there's a couple hundred of them, who own the Federal Reserve, most of them in Europe and so forth, the Bank of England, the European Central Bank, and so forth, of all of these central banks, they will control the political and the economic processes of every single nation in the world. He said this back in 1966-67 when he published his book. That has basically happened. He said we're going to be, by the year 2000, we'll be a managerial society. That's what he called it. And yet, and that's exactly what we're seeing right now. We have these technically expert people telling us what we can do, and we better not deviate from what they tell us to do or we're toast. And the political correctness, everything is pointing in that direction. We have become the managerial society of the world. And the Bank of International Settlements is more and more in control. Now, how can you say that based because of the United States being autonomous? Well, the United States isn't so much autonomous anymore. The Economic Reform Act of 2 years ago, Franks and Dodds, basically gives the U.S. Federal Reserve powers, unbelievable powers. They're basically giving governmental powers to a private bank, the Federal Reserve. If you don't know that it's private, it is. It's not a federal organization at all. What you're doing is you're giving that bank that power to oversee our economy, which then is linked directly back to the Bank of International Settlements, because the two most powerful banks controlling the BIS is the U.S. Federal Reserve and the Bank of England. Nearly half of all monetary exchanges every single day that go on in the world go through those two banks. And as a consequence, as the leaders within the Bank of International Settlements, and the fact that the Barney Frank law, economic reform or financial reform law, gives the Federal Reserve the awesome powers that it does, basically gives the Bank of International Settlement a lot of control over the U.S. economy. Now, knowing that, the fact that they want to try to show that man is causing global warming, which, by the way, it's been pretty well conclusively shown that it's not, as we talked about earlier in the program, and it's caused by the sun, solar activity and so forth, and nothing to do with carbon dioxide. But nonetheless, the fact that they have said that, and they're getting very shrill about this, the more evidence that comes against man-caused global warming, the more shrill these people, promoters really try to convince you that we're heading for an ecological disaster of historic proportions and so forth, when in fact there is nothing to it at all. As a little aside, little rabbit trail here, back in 1992, Al Gore said that if we do not get this controlled in 10 years, it's going to be too late. Well, it's now been 22 years, or 20 years at least. Things are still normal. They're still going along. 10 years ago, they said the same thing. And earlier this year and last year, they were saying the same thing again. We have to get this solved within 10 years or it's going to be too late. People do not remember these very, very ludicrous statements that these people make when the fact their time expires and nothing's happened. But nonetheless, that's what they're trying to do, because when they get the control of cap and trade, that's what they tried to pass in legislation, and now they're doing it through the Environmental Protection Agency. When they can control our emissions of carbon dioxide, they control our economy, because almost all electricity and all energy is produced from fossil, I'm going to use the word fossil fuels again, right. Fossil fuels in one right. form or another.
Let me ask you.
About 15 to 20% nuclear, but that's about it, and a little bit of hydro. But for the most part, it is fossil fuels. And if they can control fossil fuels, they can control our economy.
Exactly. Let me push that a little further, if I may. The Sustainable Development Agenda is based on the concept of man-made climate change, as we've already discussed, and that would justify global resource management and a transition to global governance. Part of this transition includes a call to transition to low-carbon economies, and you've written a good bit about that. Tell us about low-carbon economy and what it is and how it would work if it existed.
Okay, if you go to technocracy, as I'm sure Pat has told you in the previous interview, we have basically the idea that carbon can be used as a new form of currency.
Right.
Now, what that means is that you basically have a certain amount of carbon credits. In other words, everything that you do, folks, everything that you do goes back to energy. Turning on your TV goes back to energy. Making your TV, producing your TV, manufacturing your TV goes back to energy. So everything that you do is related back to energy. And if they can control carbon, they can actually make this a basic form of money. This has been dreamed of since the 1930s, as I'm sure Pat Wood has
right.
told you.
Yep, we've discussed that with him last
factor,
week.
The key factor here is that we need something to totally destabilize the existing currencies of the world, and I think we're heading for that right now. And what will happen, as you mentioned earlier, the fact is that when that happens, and basically we have no money, either we're extremely high inflation or it's non-existent, will mean that we're desperate. In fact, cities will be the most desperate at all because there's no food can disappear off the shelves in 3 days, and if there is no incentive for truckers to bring in food or no incentive for farmers to grow the food, they're going to be out of food within 3 to 4 days, out of water probably within a couple of weeks because equipment failures and people are not working to maintain those. Our cities are going to be in a world of hurt. It'll be an utter disaster that this world has never seen before. And as you said, when that happens, people are going to say, save us, save us. We'll do anything that you want, just save us. And if they introduce this new carbon currency at that particular point in time, it will basically be the salvation of the world, but we'll have a world government that is totalitarian in its nature, because we will have to do whatever these elites say we have to do. This has been planned for 100 years, folks. This is nothing new. We have stepwise projected or included all the way down through the last 100 years to get where we are right now, and they're about to snap shut the trap around our necks or the noose around our necks.
There are so many people that just don't want to admit that there's something going on, and they're pretty well occupied with the election, and sure. I'm going to call those the party hacks.
Or rooster days.
Rooster days.
Whatever.
Or sports, or anything, right. Or the latest iPod.
Or TV, the American Idol, whatever.
Whether your phone is 3G or 4G, or how fast it is, and how cool it is. And they're losing their freedom right in front of them and being entertained, and a lot of people are unaware of what's going to happen.
Right.
But yes. And then there are some that actually are aware, and just like it's always been, those people get saying, "Oh, that's not going to happen. That's
that
not going to happen."
That won't happen here.
But I'm seeing more and more people just say, "Wait a minute, this is really bad right now. So we've got to do something." I see more things like backyard gardens, for instance. I mean, that's a small thing, but you do see backyard gardens, finding out.
Preparedness classes. They've even got a series on TV, National Geographic, I think, called Preppers. And there's a number of folks around the country that may not have the same expectation of what the disaster will be, but they're expecting a disaster of some sort.
Scripture says get your own house in order first, and that includes being prepared and right with the Lord first. That's the first order of business, and then working your way through the other things, and the rest will fall into line. But I've been reading in the book called Technocracy, a study course. It's 305 pages long, and Dr. Kaufman, this is like reading the unholy grail of the system that we're actually we're seeing unfold right in front of our eyes. It explains sustainable development. It explains Agenda 21. It explains the policies that you've already talked about, because we're moving toward a way to balance production and consumption of the Earth's resources. And one of those, of course, is energy.
Well, suppress before you balance. That's the real key.
Yeah.
They're trying to suppress consumption because they think we're evil for doing it.
Well, I think when it says balance, when Dr. Kaufman was describing the fact that this continent can actually supply all of its needs, whether it's food, energy, oil, coal, natural gas, we have everything we need on this continent, but where are we getting it? From across the globe.
True.
I'm wondering if that's part of this balance of power effort that the geopolitics thing dictates, is balancing the power, that no one country has more power than another. To the detriment, I mean, for whose benefit, not ours.
Great question. I saw a chart one time identifying the amount of debt owned that was owed by all of the major countries in the world. This was like the top 20 countries or whatever it was. Every single one of them is a net debtor country now. And it's clearly not owned by the third party, or the third world. It's owned by each other. And there's a clear purpose in, we own Chinese debt, China owns our debt, and it's clear that there's an intertwining that's deliberate and purposeful, or those numbers wouldn't all be red when you look at that chart.
That's true. That is very true. And there has been this going on for at least 30 to 40 years that I'm aware of in my lifetime.
Yeah, U.S.
where
used
they
to
want
be,
to equalize everything.
Exactly. U.S. and make it more intertwined. I think the goal is to be able to collapse everything at once. And you can only do that if everything is dependent or interdependent.
Right.
And then you crush the U.S. economy and the rest of the world falls.
Dr. Kaufman, let me ask you, what would be the consequences to communities? Let's start with communities because that would be where people would see the effect of this. If we did transition to a low-carbon economy and carbon was the currency, what would be the consequences for not only communities but individuals? And what would life be like? And I'm going to ask you one more, and this is going to be probably self-evident. Can liberty exist in this scenario?
No, it can't. In fact, liberty depends on our ability to control our own destiny. There is no other way that you can describe liberty other than being able to at least have the flexibility of controlling your own destiny. Now, our Constitution, and you go back to the Magna Carta, has always prevented one man from taking advantage of another man to control his own destiny. In other words, we have limits, and I'm not against those kinds of regulations and laws. But what we're seeing now is social engineering. It has nothing to do with limits. It has to do with trying to create an output of a certain sort where you have total equality, total everything, is that everybody has the same. The communists tried to do this in all the communist nations, and they failed utterly. Why they think that they can do this is beyond me. But one of the things that psychiatry has decided about these progressives, and I've got this in my book, basically they cannot connect with reality. They deal with abstract reasoning. They deal with emotions. Everything is decided on emotions, that we must have this or we must have that or we can't have this or that and so forth. And that's what drives their agenda, is emotion, not reality. And as a result of that, that's why these communist nations have failed. It's because reality has nothing to do with emotion. Reality is what it is. It's what it is, and we have to deal with that particular aspect and not make decisions based on emotions. Now, you can temper decisions with emotions once you understand the consequences, but unless you understand the consequences, you're always going to go off the deep end into the twilight zone, and it will destroy your society, your person, and so forth. And that's what this will happen with the carbon currency. You're going to be given a certain amount, each family, depending on the number of people. By the way, if you have more than two children, you're going to start getting penalized in your carbon currency. From that point on, you will be given allocated certain amounts of carbon currency that will then you can spend it on electricity or a new washing machine or TV or something, food, whatever. But when you're out, you're out. Then you have to try to somehow get it through something that really hasn't been developed yet from someone else. Of course, that's cap and trade, where an industry needs more permissions for emitting carbon dioxide, for instance, and he's able to buy them, or it's able to buy them from another manufacturing center that is not using all their carbon credits. But and the same thing could probably happen in society, but that hasn't been worked out yet. What we're really seeing here is the ability to control you, because you're only getting a certain amount. You no longer have private property. That's one of the things that will definitely go when we have our collapse, is there will be no such things as private property. You will be allowed to live in a certain place with a certain number of carbon credits and so forth. That's it. And it's going to be a extremely restrictive form of government, and we will basically, it'll make the Depression look like a walk in the park. I am convinced of that at this point, because there is no bureaucrat anywhere in the world or no group of bureaucrats that can make a decision that you have to make for the thousands of things that interact in an economy every single day. There is no way you can do that through the rule of or through regulations and so forth, but they're going to try, and as a consequence, they will destroy us.
I think there will probably be a natural pushback and many different types of pushbacks, and I can see under that scenario the creation of a good black market that's probably going to be issuing trading things for the carbon certificate or whatever the currency is. And I can see where people will say, okay, I'm not going to participate in this system, and end up with little enclaves where people are self-sufficient until they're shut down.
Well,
I agree. And there will be a lot of trade for skills and so forth. But, you know, that's a very low form of civilization. I don't mean negative civilization. But if you have to work so many hours and somebody has to, you exchange those hours for somebody else's help with you, You can't get very far in building a civilization that way.
Exactly.
It'll work. It's worked in the past, but it'll be at a much, much lower standard of living than we have right now.
You'd be cranking the clock back about 5,000 or 6,000 years, wouldn't you?
In many respects, yes. In fact, it would basically, I think, destroy us from an energy-dependent society into one that is basically controlled. And the thing that is really bothering me, and I discuss in the book, I have two chapters on education in the book, as to how they have dumbed down the American population to the point where the only thing that they understand is socialism, because that's all that's ever been taught in our public school systems. They have no understanding of the Constitution. The Constitution is a pile of paper that means nothing to them, and as a they're ripe for doing this kind of thing. They don't have an understanding of it, and as a consequence, because they don't have an understanding of it, they're bound to repeat history in which is shown that this kind of a system, a government system, always results in a disaster. And ironically, the system that is based upon has always been very, very violent, because you have people that are trying to fight any way they can for another little piece of the pie. It's not that you have an expanding economy like you have under the free market system that our founding fathers had established. It's just that you have this pie of carbon credits. It doesn't expand. It doesn't do anything.
Zero-sum game, as they call it in the economics, isn't it?
Yes. And as a consequence, you're going to see violence as one group of people or one person tries to take what another person has.
We saw it in New Orleans after Katrina, didn't we?
Pardon?
That happened in New Orleans after Katrina, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. There's a little microcosm of what we can look for in the future.
Well, when I was looking into the low-carbon initiatives, and there's a primer going around that's called the Transition Primer, and it's talking about this transition, voluntary, of course, to a low-carbon lifestyle. And some of the advocates of it are actually encouraging a return to what's they're referring to as Aboriginal living.
Exactly.
So here, while you're talking, I'm picturing this return to a low-carbon economy or where we reduce our carbon footprint to the point where we're not actually using what we call fossil fuels, which are really not fossil, and yet we'll have cell phones. So it won't be quite like it was 5,000 years ago or 500 years ago. It'll be less evident because, by golly, I've got a cell phone and I have the Xbox and I have my entertainment. It's much different, but I won't have property and I won't have the ability to increase my lot in life. And I won't have the ability to increase my net worth or my capital, just like you're describing. But by golly, I'll have that cell phone. And I think that's not going to dawn on people how much they've lost until they try to do something, until they try
that's
to break,
exactly right.
break out of that mold. Then they'll realize, wait a minute.
Can't start a business
let me,
anymore.
Let me read something out of a program that was developed by many, many of our federal agencies and in industries back in the 1960s, right when Carol Quigley published his book, Tragedy and the Hope. This has to deal with how the directional of the education program in the United States was going to be going. And what they're doing, they had a goal set. This is called visioning. They had this goal set. That most people, I'm quoting, most people will tend to be hedonistic and a dominant elite will provide the breads and circuses to keep social dissension and disruption at a minimum. A small elite will carry society's burdens. The resulting impersonal manipulation of most people's lifestyles will be softened by the provisions for pleasure-seeking and guaranteed physical necessities. It goes on from that. It's horrifying. It's horrifying that our government and many of our main businesses and so forth in this country sponsored this and published it, because it's exactly what has happened since in the last 50 years. It's exactly what has happened in this country. They basically, through our educational process, have turned us into automatons in which we just naturally conform to whatever the government wants us to do.
Well, the hedonism is evident when you turn on television or
yes.
you go to the movies or you see the activities that people are engaged in, and the abortion issue. Of course,
all the
sex without consequences.
Yeah, duty to die, all of that stuff is tied back into that same perspective on life.
Yes, it really does. And I finish up my book, Plundered, by actually getting into some of the reasonings as to why the Constitution worked for as long as it did. And it's because of Christianity. We were a Christian nation based on Christian laws. That is no longer the case. And basically, when God basically said that when you no longer follow my laws, you're going to result in disaster. Folks, we are dealing with disaster right now on an unimaginable scale because we have drifted away from the Judeo-Christian ethics and the legal structure upon which it was based. It is really astonishing. And until we get back to that, there is no way we can save this nation. There is none. And we can start it in this November by getting rid of all the progressives in every level of government, both the federal, state, and local levels. That's a start. But until we have the whole Christian ethic system built into us as a culture, and until we are feeling responsible to a higher authority, we will never, ever be able to take this country back to what it was and the hope that it provided for so many years, so many decades throughout history.
Didn't Adam say that this form of government would really only work with the presumption of morality undergirded by religion?
Yes, and what he meant by religion was just not any religion, but Christianity specifically.
Exactly.
And he did say that, and he was right. And I talk about that in the book and say, well, if he's wrong, then our nation could start to come unraveled if we drift away from that. Guess what, folks? We are becoming unraveled.
We are.
We're very well hollowed out.
I think we are unraveled.
Right.
I think we're actually living with more in our memories than what our reality is.
Yeah, in fact,
that's true.
There are people who have basically said that our nation will collapse when it finally is hollowed out enough where people think everything is hunky-dory, things go on today as it was yesterday and so forth. When we really start to believe that, everything is going to come to a collapse. And we are hollowed out right now where that could happen at any time.
We've mentioned your books and your website, but we didn't actually give it. So would you mind giving people a way for people to get to the website to get your books?
Right. AmericaPlundered.com. AmericaPlundered.com is my plundered book. And RescuingAmericaBook.us. RescuingAmericaBook.com is also my other website for Rescuing a Broken America. Both of those books provide solutions. Both of them look at it from there's some overlap, but some of them, they look at it from a different perspective and so forth. And from what I'm hearing about Plundered, the people that have read Plundered think it's just fantastic. So I'm hoping that it does very well. I'm hoping it has an impact on the elections in November.
You can see a lot of your articles on the Environmental Perspectives website, which is epi-us.com. That's epi-us.com. And what are some of those recommendations for actions?
Right. Well, there's two things. First of all, I think we have to be back to a Christian nation. Second of all, we need to get rid of the 17th Amendment and go back to the state election of senators, because the states are supposed to be sovereign over the federal government according to our Constitution, and the 17th Amendment strips that away from them. Until we have states' rights once again established, nothing's going to really happen to confine this federal government into the role that it was originally designed to have. Third, we basically need to be able to protect our communities. And this is in my book, Rescue the Book of America, called Through Coordination. I know we're running out of time. I don't have time to talk about that. But coordination is a fantastic tool for a local community with a local government of county commissioners or a city councilman or even a school district to be able to confront the whole effort with federal intrusion into our local politics and so forth. You know as well as I do down in Oklahoma how coordination was used to stop the Trans-Texas Highway from being built.
That's right.
An $82 billion effort stopped dead in its tracks through coordination.
And Real ID. There are other examples like that where rising up has made some difference.
In cities, in municipalities, you probably heard of this, there are pushbacks against membership in ICLEI.
Right.
And, fantastic.
Which is very good. So that's a first step. But I think it's also been a real good exercise for people to realize how guilty their city councils have been responsible for implementing these things and what roles these authorities, boards, and commissions and trusts play in implementing sustainable policies, which are the very policies that will bring us this decline that you're talking about.
What can we do to make the word sustainable an absolutely toxic word so that people no longer think that it's a warm and fuzzy good thing?
Well, I think it's being done. You know, the one thing that I've been very proud of is people like you and the Tea Party and other conservatives that have risen up in these last 3 years because of what Obama is doing. Basically, really kind of taking over the 2010 elections and hopefully even more so in the 2012 elections. It's really exciting to see that people are beginning to stand up. But folks, I will tell you this right now, in order to take this nation back, you're going to have to not watch all your evening football games and so forth. You're going to have to take some time out, put some shoe leather on the ground, support a candidate that you feel is important or a cause that you feel is important, and really spend some time on it, especially the next several months, to make this happen. Because otherwise, if Obama's elected again, we are dead. I don't see how there's any way that we can describe it any other way. Yeah. He will prevent anything of any kind of solutions. Even if we had a controlled Senate and a controlled House of Representatives by conservatives, which really seems unlikely at this point, the fact is that he will block any legislation that does not that really tries to help this nation, because he does not want to see this nation helped. He wants to see it brought down. I don't see there's any other way that you can look at what he's doing.
And we need
to make sure he's not reelected.
And he can.
I'm not sure.
I was just going to say he can keep driving all of that agenda through the bureaucracy, the administrative edicts and regulations, which are now out of control totally.
Absolutely. He's basically ruling by edict and executive order. He's become king.
Yes.
This is what he's anointed himself with. And, of course, the media is letting him get away with this. They've been supporting him right from the very start.
They welcome him.
The fact is that he is acting like a king.
Yep, he is.
We're about out of time here, so I just want to thank you, Dr. Kaufman, for taking the time out of your schedule. And I'm very happy that you've written another book and that people are picking up on it and can turn action, reading into action, because there's no point in just sitting around and being well-educated unless you're going to do something with it. And our recommendation is you have to follow your state legislatures, read the bills that are implementing sustainable policies, fight the insurance exchanges
in your city councils.
The
slogan I've been sharing with people over the last few months is that the Tea Party isn't dead or dormant. We just quit marching and started running. We're putting candidates up for office, and we're primarying existing conservatives that aren't really conservatives.
Yeah.
And I think that we're putting shoe leather on the ground, but we're feeling overwhelmed right now by how huge the task ahead of us is.
Okay, SAFE
has, yes, it is.
Okay, SAFE has kind of changed over the years. We've been around since 2006, and so we've learned a lot along the way about what the real problems are and how the process works. And so we're very grateful that what we see are more and more people awakening, just like the people who preceded OK SAFE, like Freedom 21 conferences and all those efforts. We're probably really glad when people started waking up to the fact in the 2000s what was going on. We're going to have you back again to discuss this. And the election is important. What happens in your city council is probably going to be more immediate to your
county,
how your county is being governed. And there are things that you can do. And there's nothing wrong with a little civil disobedience.
Exactly.
Just keep it civil.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're really hopefully. In order for God to bless us again, the first thing that has to come is repentance. And the individual themselves, that starts with us and then our family, and then that goes outward through society. But we do have to repent. We can't expect God to bless the mess that's here now.
Well, we need to pray for a revival along the lines of Billy Sunday or Billy Graham.
Yeah.
And that's what's missing more than politics right now.
I would agree. That's why I let off the last chapter with exactly that description. Discussion is because we need to have a revival. There is no question about it in my mind. That's the only thing that's going to save this nation.
I agree.
It is. Well, thank you, Dr. Kaufman. We're very glad that you were a guest today. This is Amanda Teagarden, and my co-host is Don Wyatt. You've been listening to America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. As we end, we'd always like to say, may God bless you.